welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This week, I'm proud to have one of my best friends in Congress, Mac Thornberry, who's the top Republican on the House Armed Services Committee. He comes from the northwest corner of Texas. It's an agricultural area, a lot of similarities to the San Joaquin Valley. But Mac Thornberry has done a lot for our troops, a lot for our veterans, and has a long, outstanding career in ensuring that our military has what they need. And he's been through a lot. He was here before 9/11, right before I arrived in Congress, the Afghanistan conflict, the Iraq conflict, everything that's happened all over the globe with counterterrorism. I've served with him on the House Intelligence Committee for a long time. But Mac, thank you for your service to our country, and thanks for appearing on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Devin.
We even have some listeners in Texas.
Oh, good. Yeah, good. So, your most educated listeners, I trust.
I hope so. Well, you know, saying that, we've had a lot of constituents of mine from the San Joaquin Valley that have moved to your corner of Texas because they've seen that it's easier to farm and raise cattle in the dairy industry. A lot of them have moved out to that part of the world, your part of the world.
No, that's true. There are some folks in Texas who are ready to put a quota on the Californians that are coming in.
That's just a joke.
But the truth is, the folks who have moved in my part of Texas, people who run dairies and other agriculture, but lots of good folks. So we're glad to have them.
And as you know, you have some of my family members that are out there, my wife's family, that live and work in your district and are proud supporters of you. And I'm sure they'd want me to say hello. They might even listen to this.
Yeah, that's good.
So why don't we start with a few personal questions? A lot of people wonder out there because they all see the swamp and watch the cable wars and people yelling at each other. But at the end of the day, we're real people and we have real lives. And I think your background is very interesting because it's similar to mine. But you grew up on a cattle ranch.
Yeah, they are similar. Nobody in my family ever thought about politics or being part of it. They'd vote and pay attention. But somehow, as I was growing up, I figured out that people in Washington were making decisions that affected us 7 miles outside a town of 2,000 people in the Texas Panhandle. They would tell us what we could plan or couldn't plan on the farmland. They would affect every aspect. So I started paying attention to politics and got interested in it. And that's really what led me to serve in Congress. But all the rest of my family is still involved in agriculture, cattle ranching.
And you wear boots sometimes. You ride a horse for reals.
Yeah. Just recently when we were home Christmas, we had some cattle to move. And
they put you back to work?
They put me to work. I will admit I don't do it often enough these days, so I might be a little sore the next day or two after I spend all day on horseback. But that's okay. That's a good soreness.
So how did you – so explain to the listener out there – there's a lot of people that hear us talk about committees and, you know, I'm on the Ways and Means Committee and the House Intelligence Committee. Of course, Ways and Means, nobody knows what that means, but it's taxes. And trade and health care. And of course, the intelligence is obviously pretty simple. But the House Armed Services Committee, what do you oversee for the person who's heard about it but doesn't really know? What are all the areas that you oversee on the committee?
Well, it's primarily the military, the Pentagon, and also the part in the Department of Energy that deals with our nuclear weapons. So if you think it's in broad sense our military and the capability that it brings, it's obviously a lot of money, it's a lot of people, but it's also a lot of responsibility. And I think together with the intelligence community, folks at DOD have done a terrific job in the years since 9/11 in preventing a repeat of that tragedy.
Yeah. So you and I have traveled around the world together, not so much in the last few years because we've been a little busy with impeachment and other things that we probably shouldn't be doing. But you and I, even before you were the top Republican on the Armed Services Committee and I became the top Republican on the Intelligence Committee, you and I did a lot of in-depth work. And I will say that I'm not just trying to play nice with you, but I always enjoyed traveling with you because you were serious. You took the job serious. We went to some fairly interesting places, but probably the one that sticks out of my mind that I think I have to take responsibility for this. But we were in India and we decided to get up to the Kashmir region And I think you and I are the last members of Congress. We were the first members of Congress in like two decades to be on the border of Pakistan in the Kashmir area, a region. And I think we were the last. But I think I was the one who insisted on taking that trip, as I recall. I don't think you were – I think you were eventually up for it. But that was an interesting time, and it's only gotten more delicate there and problematic for the area between India and Pakistan. But take us back to that time. What do you remember of that trip? It was back almost a decade ago.
I agree with you, though. It was one of the more memorable trips that I have taken and certainly that we took together. I thought it was great to get to that part of the world. And as you point out, just in the past few months, that has been very much in the news, a focus of tensions between India and Pakistan. What I remember most, however, was about a 4 to 6 hour car ride that we took from one part to another with random cattle out in the middle of the road, buses with people hanging off of them, the amazing hazards that you would never see on the highways of the United States. And I was very thankful that we made it alive.
I remember we got to the border between Kashmir and Punjab, and there's a lot of people in the sandwich, a lot of Punjabis all over the United States. But Sikhs, there's a lot of Sikhs in my community. And I remember getting stuck at that border crossing and finally saying, okay, you guys can stay here in Kashmir. I'm walking across. And we had these Sikh guys with guns pointed at us. But I was so happy to see the Sikhs that day. A lot of my best friends, I always tell them, I always remind them of that story. So I was glad that we were welcomed in the Punjab region of India.
Yeah, exactly.
I also remember that you're talking about driving in the cars, and I remember the guy, the military, he must have been with the military at the time, must have been Kashmir military. No, this was when we got into Punjab. And the guy turned around to us and said, there's only three things you need when you drive in India. You remember what those were?
No.
He said, you need a good horn, good brakes, and good luck.
And I think it's the good luck that's the most important because there are some unexpected things that jump out in front of you on those drives.
That's for sure. And obviously still a dangerous part of the world, but I think it gives us a good perspective as we go in and work on these very expensive programs and trying to help our allies. And obviously Pakistan remains a problematic spot for terrorism.
Yeah, and just to emphasize your point, it's serious work. And there is no substitute, in my view, for actually going to the places, talking to the people. And you can go to the capitals. You have to go to the capitals and talk to ministers and so forth. But to get outside a little bit and to really dig down and develop a better understanding for your work on intelligence, but even for ours on armed services, there's no substitute for seeing it for yourself.
Well, and you and I think, always saw it the same – you know, we see it the same way, which is why we had done so much together over the years. And that is that everybody wants you to go to the Capitol. But it's a lot like coming to the United States and just going to the Capitol. Yeah. If you only go to the Capitol of the country, it's great to meet with the leadership of those countries. But you don't get the real action of what's happening on the ground if you don't get out. You know, that's why you have to get out with our troops. We have to get out with our intelligence folks. We have to get out with our allies and sometimes people that are not our allies that we have to go and meet with. And they're not in the capitals usually. And that's why it's important to – you got to say hello. You got to check in with our host nation. But you got to get out there and really see where our taxpayer dollars are going and what they're being used for.
Yeah. And just to take this example, if I think it was very helpful for us to be in that part of India – see for ourselves the interactions right on the border where we were at one point, but also to see other parts of India. We were down in Bangalore and looked at some of the things they were doing with space and so different places. It helps us do our job better and have a better understanding of the world.
Right. So there's a lot going on right now, but one of the issues that I want to make sure that we cover today for our listeners is this recently – the president authorized a strike on the leader of the Quds Force, Soleimani. And I know that there's a lot of in the media at least seems to be some consternation about it. But you know, from my perspective, this is the bloodiest terrorist in history, even more than bin Laden. Not only that, because he's the number two essentially or was the number two in the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, Iran. A lot of people don't understand that, and I'm a little bit dismayed by some of our colleagues who know
the blood that this guy had on his hands, specifically the men and women that that we lost in Iraq. This was the man who ran the IED program, and so many of our veterans who are missing limbs now is a direct result of the Quds Force leader. So I don't know what could you walk us through maybe the history of the Quds Force? I think that would be helpful for our listeners. You know, it's just not that it's just one man, but it's an entire terrorist organization with long tentacles.
Well, I think that's a terrific point, because to listen to some of our colleagues, you'd think this was something that just appeared out of thin air, something that Trump dealt with, and we could, it was all unnecessary. It turns out the United States first designated Iran a state sponsor of terrorism in 1984. Ronald Reagan was president. Even under Obama, they were designated, Iran was designated as the leading state sponsor of terrorism. And this guy, Soleimani, was in charge of the Quds Force. And you can kind of think of them as the special operations forces for terrorism. He was in charge of that organization for 22 years. So he had a long history of attacking others using terrorist tactics. That's what he excelled at. And he had done it for a long time.
Including he was on the ground during the hostage when they overran our embassy in 79.
Yeah, his history goes back that far. He was obviously not the leader of Quds Force at that point, but he was that sort of terrorist radical all the way back to the beginning of the Iranian Revolution in 1979. For Americans, what we most think about are the weapons that he got into Iraq that were used to kill and maim so many of our soldiers. Iranians designed these special penetrator IEDs that would go through the floor of our armored vehicles and do just devastating damage. So, you know, the depending on how you count it, the estimates vary a little bit, but hundreds of American soldiers died because of this man, who was the mastermind of all of these things. He also, by the way, is responsible for the death of thousands of Iraqis, not to mention people in Yemen and Lebanon and Syria and so forth. So what he was doing in Iraq, he was also doing in these other countries. But the way it affected American soldiers the most was in Iraq.
Can you walk us through the tentacles of the Quds Force proxy groups? I mean, you mentioned Syria, Lebanon, Yemen. Can you walk the listeners through
that? Yeah, I think what a lot of people may not realize is the way this guy operated was setting up these other organizations to do his bidding. And so it wasn't clear always that it was Iran that was doing these things. But the Quds Force and one of their proxies, for example, is Hezbollah, that has operations throughout the world. But he would use these proxies, these other folks, where his direct control was not as clear, but still they would do whatever he told them to do. One of the well-known examples, a few years ago in Washington, they tried to get somebody to assassinate an ambassador eating in a Washington restaurant. So their tentacles are not just in the Middle East. They extend to South America and even into the United States itself. That's how bad a guy this was. Literally thousands of deaths are directly responsible to him.
And just a few months ago, we had an arrest. I think it's still awaiting trial, but we had an arrest of somebody who I think is believed to be part of the Iranian regime here in the United States.
Yeah, just to emphasize, these tentacles go right here to our homeland. And so when you know the history of this guy, how he believed that war between Iran and the United States was inevitable, when you see the using terrorist tactics all over the world, and when you know their tentacles reach even into our homeland, you have to take this very seriously, and obviously the president did.
Yeah, and as crazy as this sounds, they really see themselves, or he at least saw himself, and the supreme leader in Iran sees himself this way, is this, you know, rebuilding of the great Persian Empire. Like, the Persian Empire is going to stretch to the Mediterranean Sea, and that they're going to be a global power. People laugh because right now I think the size of their economy, somebody told me, is like the size of Maryland, the state of Maryland. So this is how these people think. And, you know, they're never going to be a great economy at this point. I mean, they could be. They have the potential. Roughly 80 million people. They have a great area to grow food production. But they've spent all their money, including the money the Obama administration gave them to sign the nuclear agreement. $150 billion total, $1.5 billion in cash, I believe. A lot of that money didn't go for food, didn't go to rebuild any of their infrastructure. It went to buy weapons that then ended up highly capable technology that ended up in Lebanon, ended up in Yemen to strike our allies.
Yeah. As you point out, the nuclear deal gave Iran a lot of money. Two things we know they did with it. One is to improve their missile capability tremendously. And we saw some of that when they attacked the Saudi Arabian refineries. Those missiles were very accurate, very, very capable. The other thing they did is help fund some of these proxy organizations in the Middle East and around the world. And so one of the reasons that Iran has become so much more dangerous, even in the past few years, is because now they had all this money to work with. And they have tried to expand their influence and control. And what that means is always attacking us. You know, it's not just happenstance that they chant death to America, consider us the great Satan. And this guy, Soleimani, was the mastermind of all of those efforts that were directed against us.
Yeah, and this doesn't go back. This goes back before and after the signing of this of the Obama agreement. The Trump plan has been, and along with Secretary Pompeo, has been to say, look, we're not going to allow these guys to build a nuclear weapon, which is essentially what you were allowed, the Obama administration was allowing them to do. I mean, even under the agreement, you could build essentially 85% of a weapon. So in order to finish it, it would only take a few months to finish it, even with the inspections. That's the concern that I think we as Americans should have, is that you cannot let lunatics like this develop nuclear weapons because you don't know when or how they will use them.
Especially with the missiles that they have developed that can go tremendous distances into much of Europe, for example. I think there's recently a map in the Wall Street Journal that shows what we know, the reach that some of their missiles have. And I think you make an important point. Steadily over these years, the problem of Iran has been getting worse and worse. And Republican and Democratic administrations have tried to deal with it, and it's still been getting worse and worse. What the President Trump has done is a bold action to try to get it on a different path. And I think it's important for us to continue to be prepared because we don't know what else they may do, but also to say, okay, if you want to be a normal nation again, we're willing to work with you to do that. Nobody wants war. But on the other hand, we're also prepared to resist the kind of terrorist tactics that you have been inflicting on us and others.
So there's essentially two paths here that the Iranians can choose to take. One is to sit down and be a normal country. I think the Secretary of State, Pompeo, who served with us on the Intelligence Committee in the past, has been very clear that we'll meet you at any time, any place. We're willing to sit down and begin negotiations, but it's not going to include any type of nuclear program. Or the other path that they could take, which is the more dangerous one, is continue to fund these terrorist activities around the globe. And we're still not out of danger here. I mean, there's still rockets are being fired as we speak. And will continue to be. What do you think we should really watch out for in terms of the threat in the near term that Iran poses in that part of the world where we have a huge laydown of our strategic forces?
Well, the main thing is we need to keep our guard up because we don't know which path they're going to choose. And we have a responsibility to defend our people wherever they are. Now, you know, they may do some more missiles or something. They have a very sophisticated cyber capability. And that's not limited to the region. You know, they have used cyber to attack some websites and companies inside the United States. So that's a possibility. But then you also have these proxies in all sorts of places around the world that they may use to try to have a deniability, say, oh, that wasn't us, that was them. But yet being the ones who control the strings and inflict greater damage of various kinds. So there's a lot of possibilities. They have a lot of options available to them. The most important thing for us is to keep our guard up, make it clear we're going to be strong and we'll deal with whatever you want to throw at us, but we're also willing to talk.
Right. And the president, you and I have spent time with the president, being some of the top leaders in the House on the Republican side, on the national security side. I think one thing that we at least from my perspective, and love to get yours, but the president really doesn't like the huge laydown of forces that we have all over the globe. He thinks we spend too much money. He thinks our partners aren't spending enough money. He's looking at the budget deficits. But with that said, he does not want war with Iran. But he's, I think, now made clear that he's not going to take any more of these shenanigans.
Yeah. No, I think you put it really well. The president understands his first responsibility is to protect America, to defend the American people. And we would absolutely like to have fewer troops and less tensions in the Middle East and elsewhere. But he's going to do what it takes to defend the country. And, man, I think that's what we expect of a president.
These embassies that we place around the world, that's our territory. And we cannot have embassies that get overrun by terrorists or get attacked, like happened in Benghazi, like has happened in Iran before. I think we downplay, and the media has been downplaying, the seriousness of the attacks on New Year's Eve on our embassy in Baghdad. And you and I have been there many times. Yeah. But this is not something that we should take lightly, and no president should. I mean, we have to defend our personnel that are overseas.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And you can't and shouldn't talk about it, but I think it's very clear that more attacks against Americans were coming quickly. And that was the key factor that led the president to take action, that something had to change or else we were just going to be – it's kind of like a bully. If you don't stand up to them, they're going to be more and more aggressive, and that's the direction that this was headed.
Yeah. So I remember just closing here, Mac, one final little story of you and I overseas. But we were in Indonesia, if you remember, which is also a place that has a lot of terrorist challenges.
Yeah.
And I think this is another funny story. I'm from California. I'm used to earthquakes. And in the middle of the night, it was a huge like 7 or 8 point something earthquake that had happened out in the ocean, Indian Ocean. And it shook the building we were in so high, it woke me up. And I'm, you know, used to earthquakes. And I went downstairs right at 6 in the morning, got a cup of coffee. And, you know, I wasn't sure if that hotel was going to stay standing or not. You strolled down a few minutes later, got a cup of coffee. I don't think you even woke up during the earthquake.
Yeah, I don't think I woke up either. I don't remember. What I remember also, though, about being there is we went by a fish market at kind of mid-morning or something, and the smell was so bad I had to cover my face with a handkerchief.
Wasn't a place you wanted to buy any fish from.
So that's my memory. I slept through the earthquake, but I remember the fish smells.
Yeah. Well, Mac, thanks a lot. Thanks for all your service. Thanks for what you do to protect our country and your commitment to our men and women in uniform. I appreciate you coming on today.
Well, Devin, thank you for having me, and thank you for your support of the men and women of the intelligence community who do a tremendous job of keeping us safe.
Well, thank you. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith.
not afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.